actually, what is forensic software doing? In my view, in some cases, one has to tell me. I'm here as Cappuccino. I've been here 2 years ago, as a conference as a guest, and I found it so interesting from the point of art journalism that I thought, what could I contribute next time the conference occurs? And so, since I work in the world of investigative journalism, I try to contribute something in that area. But I would think that all of you are separated because you have seen and thought of so much, so to get a little bit more going, you have the possibility to play bingo, which is help to remind what this is about, and note the small print below. The first printer who shouts bingo after the red slide gets a free book. I have two assistants today. Can you name them? Anybody knows them? Anybody? Irony? Captain Obvious? And the other one? That's a difficult. It's Mr. Ockham from Ockham's Razor. He's the guy who says that the shortest distance to an answer usually leads to the best answer possible. And both of them are kind of guides to what I'm talking about. But first we have to ask a stupid question to get things going, and this is, what is investigative journalism? Because you might have another definition than I have. Or maybe the question is not so stupid. Let's start with, what is investigative journalism not? It's not daily reporting. It's not leak journalism. Pure leaking is not journalism. It's chaos publishing, whatever you call it. Single source reporting is not investigative journalism. If you have only one witness for something happening, you can't prove it otherwise just by one person, then you might have a problem with what is investigative journalism. The misuse of information is not investigative journalism, and paraparsi journalism is also not. But what might be investigative journalism, or the best closest you can get, is watchdog journalism. Exposing how laws and regulations are violated and holding the powerful accountable. Which is something you have to kind of grasp with ethics. How do you know you might work in investigative journalism? Well, I, for my part, have 3 points. One, you put, and it's important for me, you put your sources' well-being over your own. You're willing to go to prison not to reveal your sources. We might be lucky in this country that you can't really be prosecuted for not revealing your sources. You might get a cross warrant searched. But in other countries, you really can hit the wall. You try not to judge us by your thoughts and impressions, but by the data and the evidence you gather what is going on. And you ask and confront the companies and the persons, at least in the later stage of your investigation, with what you already investigated to get a second side, to give the other side a point to contribute, to retribute, to explain themselves. It's a slippery slope at one point. If you have, for example, just to get your minds into that, if you have a source, a person coming to you, tipping you off that there is a terrorist cell doing this or that, and you report on that, some people might come to you and say, well, you know a person who told you much about the cell, we'd like to interrogate him if he knew something about the bomb or future attacks or something like that, and then you're in a dilemma which I personally didn't have, or which didn't occur to me, but I would think it very hard that you have to decide if this is a source not to give up the information and instead to say, well, no, I don't. And maybe you ask why investigative journalism and what's wrong? Well, this is sick, it might be boring just to talk about investigative journalism, so why am I here? I'm here because of that. You know what this is? Yeah. It's change. I want to change things. At least I want to start a conversation about changes. So I wrote tiffin. I brought three things in each division. I brought three examples about what the issues in investigative journalism might be. I brought three useful things that already exist, and I have three wishes about what investigative journalism might need. And you have to think with the introduction that investigative journalists in general are not IT sage, they have no IT background. They're specialists in their area, in finances, in politics, in military, and stuff like that. There are some people which I recently met that are IT wise, but they're the minority. The majority have specializations in different areas. So first, the three issues that are with investigative journalism right now. One has to do with Breivik. This guy doesn't only kill 77 people, but he brought a new pest to investigative journalism. Now, you read about the story, did you?
Yeah,
everybody has. And when you read, this slide specifically is about perception. Just take a moment to read the slide. Or don't read it in that way, but look at it. It's just, from the perception, it's just text. And when you try to report about something, even if it's totally ungraspable, you want to make it not so boring. What you do is, you use pictures. Now, what would be the question about that and about investigative journalism, you ask? Well, the question is, how did this picture end up in the news? Because it shows this guy who killed so many people a couple of minutes after he was taken into custody from the police. But the police didn't release this picture. So where did it come from? Well, this is part of the evidence that was handed out to to the joint plaintiffs, so to the people who were indirectly or directly in this case, like parents of killed youth or people who have been injured or other people. So they get this legal documentation so they can kind of see the whole picture of the law enforcement in the process. Well, in this case, the picture was special because it was a trap. This picture was intentionally placed into the evidence to find a leak, because the lawyers and the people who get hold of these documents are not supposed to give it to anybody else. They kind of have an NDA to that. This is just meant to make the defense attorneys and the prosecution attorneys to be knowledgeable, but not to be able to hand it over to the press. But in this case, with the amount of victims and the amount of people involved, it was in the hands of, as I heard of, 100 and more people. So a circulation of more than 100 people is very hard to grasp who is really having or leaking information. So how do we know? Well, we know because when this picture was released in some newspapers in Norway, the police specifically found the leak. And the leak was found because it was watermarked with Digimon. Digimon is usually used for photographers. It's part of Photoshop and you can also have it for other photo software to mark pictures to say this is done by me, it's copyright, and it gets a serial number and a specific code. And this is by design, if you read the patterns, kind of tamper resistant. If you print it in a newspaper, you tape it with a recorder and then broadcast it to TV, the information is still there. I can show you, just to break out of the presentation, a very blurry picture, I think I have here. Just a second. Let's see. I'll show somewhere else. So if you see this quality, it's rescanned, it was taken from snapshot from TV. The watermark's still in there. Maybe it's even in the stream when you, that gets rebroadcast. So, putting it away again. And this is the stuff New Nightmares for Journalism is made of. So the source was discovered in SAC, wasn't it, as I know, a lawyer but a different person. person. And I've just been recently told by this by Elf Andre Magnusson and Anders Jørgensen on the Data Harvest in Brussels, which was a totally different conference. It wasn't really about specific investigative journalism, but about data journalism. And they would just reveal with what issues they have to deal in the investigation of this killing. Which leads to something very simple. For each copyright tracing, origin tracing software where there is a dual use, apart from defending copyright, whatever this was repurposed, there's also a high probability that law enforcement and other people like companies will use that to trace leaks. And journalism are not really prepared for this. I would think you're screwed, or we will eventually be screwed. And if you go back to one of the definitions that you would be willing to go to prison for your sources, now you're really in a problem zone, because you have to make sure that all that information you get, if it gets published, or if some extraction of the text gets published, that it doesn't contain any kind of traceable amount of information to the source. This is really a problem. And next one. The next up is data retention. Yesterday I saw a data retention classic from Malte Spitz. You may have seen it before. He's also demonstrated with the application in Die Zeit what kind of information you can grasp from that track printed down. But I'm talking about something completely different. I'm talking about something that is called our first world problem. And it's like this. You have an Xbox, and it records all my IPs ever. And so I don't need any kind of data retention at all. I mean, you have some kind of device or service, and it's outside the usually data boundaries we usually focus on, and then the stuff gets stored, and it's accessible by law enforcement. So here's the only flashy slide I have. These are all the brands who have kind of lawful enforcement documents who contain information saying, well, we keep the IP addresses for maybe ever, maybe a year, two, three, and what the people are doing, and so. And if you look like the last one, the iCloud thing, that journalists fancy these Apple products. And this is coming from the ease of use. But this is also screwing the journalists right now, because it's ease of data collection, and it gets all stored somewhere. I wouldn't suggest this is done with the very bad malicious intention, but I would suggest it's what you call this collateral, a problem that occurs with all the emails. There may be more dramatic problems with all the store and stuff and more, but I'm still focusing on the core issues of investigative journalism, and protection of sources is in it. Because if you store this information, information is traceable, then law enforcement will kind of try to corner in people by that. And they're advertising it everywhere. I've seen some stuff about a conference. I'm just showing you two slides. This is mass interception. They're kind of, okay, if you don't really know who the target is, well, we can help you target all. And if you combine it with that, transparent signal access and monitoring, Glamourglass is offering a solution for any data rate, any protocol, any format. So tapping into FiberWire and just getting a copy for whatever purpose, you think, yeah, well, privacy problems aside, this is, for me, just an issue with journalism. I can't guarantee with the transparent copying retention of data that my sources are protected. I'm forced to go to parks again and talk with people because this might not be monitored. Okay, drones and stuff, but you know. So hey, that's what I'll be obvious. Now, the third thing is totally obvious too, but I want to focus on this and then go over to some solutions and some stuff. this is logs, leaks, and new generation leaks in comparison. With logs and BDML, we have with the FGAP warlogs. With leaks, we have BML, which was on WikiLeaks. And with new generation leaks, I mean stuff that will or is actually appearing in journalism in forms of terabytes of data or 100 gigabytes of data. And to show you what the problem with that is, we have to, for a moment, step aside and see the classic workflow of investigative journalists, the 1.0 version. Classic journalists used to work with paper, so they get these copies of binders, documents, whatever. They would sit at a table and then have their source documents and a binder and some papers. They would even do it with colleagues or with hired people, and would start reading through this. And if they find something interesting, they would see, okay, when this is happening, and then sort it into a second binder. And by doing that, a very simple function in programming would say, they would get through the whole documentation, and in the process, put all the events in order of occurrence. At the end of that, they would have something which is called a timeline. If you imagine what piece of work is that, if you have like a meter of legal documents from prosecution or even more, you know why sometimes many people are needed to investigate. It's a second for the person index, because you have to do the process again or in kind of more complex way to find out all the people who are in your documents. And for important places and stuff like that, all of your locations, you have to do it again, or in the process, you have to complicate where you put things. So, what's the question about this? You know? Does it scale? Well, computer says no. So this is a problem. Cool, problem. Solving problems is sexy. Let's think about that for a moment. So first would be digitize that chip and OCR it and see what we can do. I would suggest we start with find, as I would do. But we would hit the wall with regular expressions, and you have to do it over and over again to find some stuff. It's also not intelligent. You have to actually know what you're searching for, because find doesn't know. It just finds something you already want to search for. Progress somewhere. Let's see. Let's get Lucy and index that stuff and get local searching. Nice try. You still don't know what's in it. You have indexed the documents, but what's in it? What would be better? There's some things that would be better when I put in the proposal for this presentation I thought of. One is called DT search. This is something some colleagues use and I use. In terms of, it's a commercial product, it's a super cool search engine, a local search engine for documents, it's done in file formats. And what it makes it exceptional to all the other stuff is that you can search for search terms near each the other search terms, which is something you completely lack from traditional internet search engines, at least what I know of. So if you want to have some persons mentioned together, if they're in the same document, a stupid search engine would just return that document, but if you can say in the vicinity of 10 words, then you would get a less small amount. But I would think, yeah, or maybe I should do something more interesting. So I will now demo something called Jigsaw. Who knows this software? That would be interesting. Nobody. Super. Surprise. Let's see how I can make this displays work together. I have this knack to do everything live, even the indexing. I found it doable in this context. Jigsaw is written in Java, so it should work. Here it is. I will give you the reference that you will at some point. I've been specifically allowed to present it here, which I have to make a remark later, that another product I just 3 days before the presentation found out has in such an awful NDA that I'm not allowed to even talk about what it is. But this works. So what do we do? We import something which is already prepared, and I like to vote. We can either import the Bible or something about breast cancer. What do you want to see?
Bible.
Bible? Okay, let's see about Bible.
More violence.
Okay. So, this is a set of documents, which is just to show what this system will do with this set of documents. All the chapters of the Bible has been sliced into single text documents and nothing else in this compact file. The next step, we're talking about entity identification. This is a step that is lacking all the search products I mentioned before, and it's actually an interesting thing for the journalist to find out about what is really going on in documents and who's mentioning what. There are three which work offline and one which works online. Question to the audience. Does anybody know OpenCalais? One, two, okay. OpenCalais is an online entity extraction run by Thomson Reuters, which you can use for your harness for your projects and for your content or whatever. And OpenCalais identifies persons, times, relations, notions. The other ones does this too. I take this fast one gate here because this is good. Also, just for the interest, if the Bible contains any IP addresses, zip codes, phone numbers, dates, whatever, we do that because rule-based entity identification, what is actually the real name for that? Regular expressions, I would say. So, it's fine. It might take a few minutes. Well, it's actually fast. You usually use Jigsaw with a couple of monitors, and this is because you will get a couple of views on the content, and this looks a little bit not so sexy fancy, but in the concept like an RTV report, because you get a view on the content of the documents and researches from different display methods. I think the one of the main author or the person who's the gatekeeper to the project, Jason Stasko, I wrote him an email asking him if I can use this product for purposes working with documents, and he's like, yeah, go ahead, just sign this legal document, which he sent me with the source, with the running version, so like he's a really trustful person, and off I go. And so if you're interested in the project, I will provide you with the URL, and you should just write it and say, on a plane, and he'll say, yeah, most probably. So, I don't know that there are so many chapters in the Bible. Anyway, now we're coming to the end. Any questions so far? By the way, the forensic term, it comes from Latin and it means before the public gathering. And it means in terms of journalism, the software we would use to get information accessible for us before we report, which is not the CSI stuff, but the stuff that really was reported. So, let's see. Jigsaw has found 618 persons, locations, organizations, date, and some money. No IP addresses, no telephone numbers. Now, I have to correct myself. Now, Jigsaw found out that the entity extraction method I choose, and Jigsaw has four, so it might vary in the others. The main view for Jigsaw is the document viewer and the search. So, who do we search for? Jesus. Now, here are all the chapters Jesus is actually mentioned. And extraction, that it, for the specific text, it tells us, okay, who is actually mentioned? The persons, then the location. And we see here, for the whole context, what are, like a word cloud, what are the things that it's talking about. If we search for that, we can view the results in different kinds of views. And one of them is the, let's see here, I think it's a document here. No, let's start. I hope this works. I was betting on breast cancer then. It's so tempting. Let's search again. If it doesn't stick, I throw something else in the light. Let's see the word tree for that. Because I know how that works. The word tree is easy because you see in the word tree which are terms used and how they split. This is actually not a technical demo to show you what fancy the software is doing, but something about what as a journalist is fantastic because it gives you a different insight. So this is not like fancy software, but this is like, yeah, interface. It helps, might help people understand a whole range of documents. If you think about the Enron documents, if you think about the documents of the oil spill, there's so much information out there. As a journalist, you might not even read all the stuff in your lifetime, so you need software to do that. And this is a way to get it to that. You can click on it, and then it falls again, which is this answer it said. So you see, in terms of visualization, what is actually said from Jesus or from other people. But you can also see some so who's related to whom? Let's see how the money relates to the persons. So here's the money on the left side, and here are the persons on the right side. And you say, show me all productions. And yeah, in the Bible maybe that's not a big deal. But in cases where it is about money, it would be very interesting for journalists to get a grasp, to get an overview. And so yeah, can I maybe kind of reaction see that and get the concept of what I'm talking about? It's just about different views and interfaces. And I would say that in the next slide I would show you the URL and I can send it to anybody who likes. And there's a very good video documentation about that. Even if you don't ask for the program itself, you can see what's actually be able to do with that. If you have your personal library about specific things that might help you, if you are able to get hold of the software. So, any questions about that? So this is URL, put it on. The next thing would have been me, yes? Yeah, you have to get a mic. Come here.
Where do the dictionaries come from? I think if you are identifying persons by name and you don't have a dictionary identifying a word as a prename, for example, then the whole operation will fail.
Yeah, as I know, there's a specific interface for entity extraction and clear up. So you can provide your own dictionaries. But Jigsaw is, as I know from my design, at first focused on the English language. So if you want to do it in Norwegian or in German, you have to at least put in some heavy work. But then again, most of the international investigations are run in English and most of the legal documents are in English, so this is kind of not hindering.
So you have to know something about the document.
Well,
looking into.
As I know from other data projects, you will find in nearly any kind of language which more than, let's say, 3 million people speaking it, that there's some kind of university word list, a dictionary, a list of names or something like that. Yes, if you name your child a very specific term that nobody else is named, then it will be invisible to the list. This is what happened. So, but then again, if you see what the alternative is, reading all the stuff and not getting a grasp, then this is something else. And I have to personally say, this is a lecture, or was a lecture to me in imperfection. I would say, like, at first, well, it doesn't get everything. Why does identification in the example of the Bible identifying God as a location? He's not a location, is he? Maybe he is. Whatever. But this imperfection is not really important. It's important that you get a grasp on the whole thing in a different way.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Good. So the next software I wanted to talk about, I can't talk about. So this is where the red slide comes in. But I have something in replacement before I get to the three wishes. It's an abandoned project which I really like to get revived. And it sets a need maybe even for other things. It's called TimeFlow. Anybody heard of it? No? Okay. So let's start it again. Because TimeFlow is actually helping in the process of what I said to get you a grasp of what data you're processing, what information you're processing. Display. So, okay. It's also in Java. Here we go. So here's TimeFlow. It was created 2 years ago by Fernando Viegas and Martin Wattenberg, and with Sarah Kahn from the Duke University. As I know, the two people at the beginning soon departed to IBM, and maybe they're still there. They moved off to a different place in time. And this is on GitHub, and it's kind of 2 years old, everything there I checked today. There are a couple of forks, but as I would see them, they're not really progressing. And it's still working, but it's also kind of done. What does it do? Well, import something. Let's import. Return something. So, import this. This is about the oil spill. And what this does is it gives you, from the perspective of a journalist, an overview about what's happening. If you remember the process I told you when you go through the papers and the documents and you try to write it down, you can do this on a computer, maybe in OpenOffice spreadsheet or Excel or whatever. And when you export this in a specific format that this software can read, then you get to the interesting part. And this is that you can kind of change the view here and see details. And here's another view, like a calendar, where you see, okay, there's nothing happening here, something happening, you can see something, what's happening here, you can get a list, boring, table, and bar graph, which tells you when you have labels and tags, what this is all about. This changes your ways you can access your own written data. Sadly, as I said, it's not progressing anywhere. For you and other people hearing this, it might be really good to take this and make it more usable, because I have to kind of rewrite the list and do some other things before this really works. It's not working out of the box, and if you think a journalist with no technical skills ever touches some piece of software again after failing with that, you're wrong. It's kind of working that way. I suggested something like that to a colleague and it's not working, he's like, yeah, I'm never trying that again. Which would be bad. So, back to my wishes. So, I have three wishes, and you might think, is this a call for help or am I just too lazy to program? Well, sadly, my time and capacity is bound to other things. But there are some things which I think would be nice to have, and I'm starting with small things and then giving to big things. One would be a tutorial how to get an MTA, so a mail server, to deny non-PGP mails. This is an interesting thing because I see you just kind of, what, why, how? Well, the thing with that is, if you want to do investigative journalism, you want to communicate securely. Now, the thing with that is, people are joining in first-time users with PGP, and they forget. So they're sending sensible stuff around unencrypted. And you're like, yeah, delete the mails, please don't spread it again. I told you how to work this and stuff like that. So we're already taking care of ourselves and trying to set up our colleagues with PGP. But for projects, it would be interesting to have MTAs deny unencrypted mails if you set up your colleagues with that and saying very politely, thank you very much, you didn't just encrypt, try again with encryption. And then everything is fine. At least at that point, like make sure they don't distribute the stuff on this very server to people without encryption. There might be other issues that we have to take care of, but this is solving a problem a way that they remind the origin of the unencrypted mail to take care of it and done. It's simple. I've searched for that. I didn't find really good solutions for that. I'm running a Qmail server, very embarrassing, but in that I have kind of a rule set that works with that, but other colleagues are actually having servers with something like Sentinel, XM, Courier, Postfix, Zimra, whatever, and they can't really switch to the Qmail or complicated version of mail, so that would be nice. Next thing would be help translate and deploy document card. You know that project? We need that. It's cool. It's too cool not to have. Document Cloud is collaboration for journalists in the process of publishing, and then publishing to the public. If you have sensitive documents or documents of interest, you want to be able to share the documents with colleagues and then publish them collectively with remarks and narrow it down to the interesting parts. Document Cloud has been funded by the Knight Foundation in the States. It's actually a working product, but it's only in English. There has been no translation. And with no translation also comes, it doesn't have entity extraction for the German language, which would be also nice to have. They actually have a person right now in the IRE working on it. And Dan is trying to prioritize, as I understand, which language to start first and what to do. And people with experience in Ruby Rails would fantastic. I myself would contribute the language part, like translating the interface and stuff like that. And the goal would be to have something with a script installable or a virtual machine instance to deploy to journalists or to people who working collaboratively on documents to make it accessible. But there's a problem. And this is a real challenge. As I was describing in the process, making a system for a distributed group of people to collect information and combine, this would be really fantastic. And I don't mean a wiki. Yeah. Because when it comes to this process, you want to make it as simple as possible. And what I could provide from my point of view is knowledge of the process, and what you could provide is making an interface or making a system which kind of first checks what the inputs are and puts in the right place and then links the stuff all together. Now this is something that might be really interesting for people who have money. They call it the Knight Foundation. They're having a new contest starting at the end of May to the 20th of June. This wrapping about data. They actually give a million or something like that away. The competition is international, it's open to anyone. You have to jump to some loops in terms of what you have to provide in terms of project documentation and stuff like that. But as I know some colleagues with good programming skills combined with hackers have made it and gained access to the enrolled money to produce really things that help journalists. And if you're interested, well, it's not a small print, please feel free to contact me. I would really, if not that challenge, the challenge is, I think, in the frequency of every 3 or 4 months, it would be really interesting to contribute something for that. So, questions? Well, I have also questions for you, but now, questions. And that's the end for me. Somebody has a mic? Nobody has a question? I guess it is. What do you think? Is this plausible? Does journalists deserve to be helped? It's a problem of entropy. If you spread it to 10 or 50 people unencrypted, then 10 or 50 people have to delete it. And this is a problem that makes not things really go away, but it would contain the problem to the person leaking. I know unencrypted sending can be kind of, you know, used by law enforcement or whatever, but if you think about it, that some of the people on the mail server might sit in countries which are really eyeing on people, and you're kind of sitting in a comfortable country like this, and you're sending without taking care, non-encrypted email revealing what your project is about, then this is an issue.
I can give you some ideas on how to solve that problem. But which book could we read? Bingo.
You. But you. Congratulations. When you just use it for your own and nobody gets told, it's nothing like this. But this is recorded, this is broadcasted over the internet maybe, or archived somewhere, and I would think, okay, maybe you can say, don't record it, don't archive it, don't broadcast it. That would kind of defy the purpose. And I would say, Jigsaw is already showing you what I was talking about. I would just show you some fancier version of that, which would cost a lot of money and would be specifically targeted to law enforcement, which you would see then that law enforcement without knowledge is capable of getting a deep insight into a hard drive or any kind of data amount they have, because it opens up any kind of file type. It just gets a better view on the structure, and it links persons and stuff better together than you have seen. There are kind of three or four versions or developers of that software on the market, so just look for that. By the way, I have two more things before you just walk out to show you. And I would think this is interesting because when I would see the talk about ACTA and about other things, I have found this source of information just recently because colleagues told me. And this should be interesting to everyone dealing with the EU. Since Norway is part of the European Union, they have very good digitalization and processing of any official document. So this is something you can only dream about in Germany. This is the access, the one interface access to all the ministries and documents in Norway. And I couldn't believe it as a journalist because I've been dreaming of this since I started getting into journalism. And let's select all the issues here. Let's say I want to have something about ACTA. And then all years and say go. I get 117 hits about documents. Nothing has been exempted, so they would list even a document if it's secret or exempted. And the really interesting thing is you can just add it to the basket. And then you would just say order access. They just say, okay, we send you by email. And as you can see, they only have to use email address. This is ridiculously simple to access documents if they are kind of in the circle which Norway has access to. If you want to have something about the EU, about some processes going on, about relations from the Norway to other countries, to get hold of. And I've seen that nowhere specifically in other countries neighboring us, this country. This would make investigative journalism and citizen journalism and whatever just more easier. Try that. The other thing is, it's already too late to go there, but what I really wanted to see is more of you people at something called Netzwerk Recherche, the year conference. It's 2 weeks from now, but it's already set up in terms of what is presented, and I don't think you can't. Yeah, you can still go there, you have to pay money for this. They're starting to get more and more attention to people who have something to say and knowledge in the digital age. And it would be really interesting to have more hackers for the hacks there, for the journalists.